This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, Kalamazoo Central High School senior Reuben Glasser describes his experience at the March for Our Lives in Washington, D.C. this past weekend and updates us on the activities of the group Students for Gun Legislation. But first, the federal budget signed last week by President Donald Trump includes $300 million for Great Lakes restoration programs. Last year, the president had proposed a budget that would have eliminated that funding. Gary Wilson is a contributor to Detroit Public Television's Great Lakes Bureau. Gary, good to talk to you again.
Good to be back with you, Gordon.
Is this overall result surprising, given what we saw play out last spring and summer with the Trump administration proposing this drastic cut, getting pushback from members of the congressional delegation in states like Michigan, and ultimately the money being restored?
No, it's not, Gordon. As I mentioned in the article, Trump's budget last year, just about a year ago, where he eliminated all money for the Great Lakes Restoration Program, that was a shock to the collective system of the broader Great Lakes community. I think given Trump's declarations about the EPA in general, as he was a candidate, that it was no surprise that there would be, you know, cuts coming here and there. But to go from $300 million to zero, as I said, really shocked the system. And it served as a rallying cry for the Great Lakes region legislators, for the advocacy groups, for other groups like the Great Lakes Commission and a group of mayors. And this Great Lakes community, sort of writ large, has really jumped on the bandwagon to push back on Trump's cuts. So no surprise, and we'll have to see where it goes from here because it's not over yet.
How important would you say are the public comments of EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt? At one point, he seemed to be on board with the idea of cutting funding for Great Lakes programs, but he eventually said that these are important and need to be funded. Is that an important part of the story?
I think it is an important part of the story, Gordon. I watched him testify before House of Representatives Appropriations Committee after last year's budget was released, and he was defending the Trump administration, as he has to at that point, justifying the cuts. He got some hard pushback from the Democrats on the committee, and he got some soft but direct pushback even from the Republicans. But after that, he hit the road, and he was traveling throughout the country. He did actually come to the Great Lakes region once or twice. And I think everywhere he went, he was getting an earful about Great Lakes restoration. And not only just the Great Lakes, but I know in the Chesapeake Bay and the Puget Sound, they were subjected to the same types of cuts as the Great Lakes region. And I think he finally just said, wait a second, this is there's something here that I need to pay attention to. And that's when he came out with a public statement that said that, you know, these Great Lakes restoration programs are worth funding and they're worth protecting in the budget.
So let's look at a couple of specific proposals that President Trump had put out there and talk about how Congress dealt with them. One of those being Asian carp. What's the latest here now on the EPA and basically the federal funding and the federal study for trying to keep Asian carp out of the Great Lakes?
Well, federal funding in the restoration budget, a lot of the money that to fight Asian carp currently is in the EPA's budget, and much of that goes to the state of Illinois for this fishing that they do to try to cull the carp out of the Chicago waterway system, which is the path to Lake Michigan. So the restoration funding means that that will continue. Otherwise, if it had been eliminated, Illinois and perhaps the other states would have had to put up that money out of already tight budgets. The big thing with Asian carp was Senator Debbie Stabenow, Michigan, was able to get some language in there that into the budget bill to force the Army Corps of Engineers to meet their original deadline for that study at the Brandon Road Lock and Dam, that choke point that needs about $280 million of infrastructure changes. The Trump administration had put that study on hold, so they lost a good 6 months of time for the study to be completed. And Senator Stabenow and some others were able to lobby and get put into the bill that the Corps has to meet that original timeline. Now, whether they will or not is a question, but at least it's codified in the law now.
I believe the last time we had you on, Gary, we were discussing the fact that the Kalamazoo River Superfund site was one of those across the country given priority status. Do we see anything in this budget bill that tells us anything more about Superfund sites, specifically the Kalamazoo River one, and any further clue about what priority status actually means?
Well, there is some information in there. I had a number of exchanges in the past few days with Liz Bowman, the spokesperson for the EPA at the headquarters in Washington, D.C., and she did a lot of digging to try to figure out what this means. And I would just caution listeners that there's a lot of information coming out about this budget that was really, you know, put together at the, you know, saw daylight at the last minute before Congress had to vote on it and the president signed it. But Bowman told me that most of the money, about $63 million that was tucked into this budget, is going towards what are known as orphan sites, sites where there's no responsible party that can be made to pay for the cleanup. And that's not the case with the Kalamazoo River. But what Bowman said was that with Kalamazoo River, EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt will be placing an emphasis on this site to resolve existing litigation. Now, my interpretation is that Scott Pruitt is a former Attorney General of Oklahoma, so he's well-versed in the law. In fact, as Attorney General, he sued the EPA some number of times, I think, in the teens. But my interpretation is that he's looked at the Kalamazoo River case, examined the litigation, and he thinks there's an opportunity to get this resolved reasonably quickly, which would give him a win on these Superfund sites that he's given a priority to. But more money, no.
And resolving it is one thing. Of course, we don't know what the details of that is. So a win, I guess, would very much be in the eyes of the beholder there as to what that means actually for the people who live around the Superfund site in Kalamazoo, as well as these other places.
You're exactly right, Gordon. Every one of these areas, whether they're Superfund sites or just other toxic sites that are eventually, and I'm quoting here, cleaned up, there's always some pushback from people in the region who don't feel like the job is totally done. There's still work to do. Capping toxins in water is one way to declare a site remediated. But they're still there. They're just sealed for, you know, some number of years or decades. And a lot of people don't like that. So you're exactly right. Beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
How important was this removal of a rider that would have made it easier for the EPA to roll back the Clean Water Rule?
Well, I think it's important. The Clean Water Rule, also known as the Waters of the United States rule, was put forth by the Obama administration to define which waters come under the Clean Water Act. It was 2 years in the process, and there was a lot of pushback on it, primarily by the agricultural community. And one of the first things that the Trump administration wanted to do, and again with EPA Administrator Pruitt, was to get rid of this rule. But there's a process that has to be followed. You can't just eliminate a rule. You have to look at it. You have to decide if you want to modify it. You have to go through a formal process. It includes public comments on the rule if you want to change it or eliminate it. And the administration, with support from members in Congress, mostly Republicans, and I would include Representative Upton in this group, were trying to tuck this rider into the bill that would allow the EPA to not follow those rules for the review process. And especially it would have eliminated the requirement for public comment. So the EPA will definitely try to deal with this rule, try to modify it dramatically or get rid of it, but they will have to follow all the requirements of it. Which, if this rider had been successful, they could have skipped all those administrative requirements. So, I think it's a big deal.
President Trump was also trying to reduce the size of the EPA, cut its budget. How did Congress react to that?
Kind of a non-starter with Congress. EPA has long been the president's whipping boy, and including many members of Congress. But again, cooler heads prevailed, even on the Republican side of the ledger, where on the Appropriations Committee, you know, they essentially they kept the EPA budget at level. There was no reduction to it. It had been reduced previously, but I think that was only a 7 or 8% reduction. Trump again was looking for a 31% reduction, which was just a non-starter. Like I said, even with Republicans, you know, the reality is that every member of Congress and every legislator, they've got something in their state or in their district that the EPA does. So while they may rail against the EPA publicly about regulatory overreach, and some of that is real on their part, but they also recognize that the EPA does work that helps the environment in their communities. So they took a critical look at it and said, let's just leave the budget where it is.
I recall, though, you and I having another conversation where you pointed out that the size of the budget, the size of the agency, may not matter as much as what is being done on regulations. If regulations are really being rolled back, the size of the agency isn't the thing to focus on. Does that still hold true now?
I believe it does. You know, the agency has shed, I've read, 600 scientists. Somebody can fact check me on that. Through, you know, voluntary buyouts, early retirements. But as I talk to some people on background, you know, the people on staff at the EPA who can't talk publicly for fear of retribution say, you know, they just kind of keep their heads down and go to work and they do their reports and they work on their enforcement actions just like they did before. But they have a sense that as it gets rolled up, that these things like enforcement, you know, just aren't a priority for this EPA. So still a lot of work to be done there.
Do the members of Congress from Michigan and other Great Lakes states view this as an environmental issue? Do they view it as an economic issue, or are they viewing it as some combination thereof?
I would say it's a combination. You know, everything comes down to economics at some point. But the way Congress has been throwing around money, you know, lately, especially in this budget, economics, even by some of the most fiscal conservatives, seems to have gone out the window. I think there's a lot of sentiment in Congress to spend money on environmental issues, not so much sentiment to regulate people. There's still this belief that the Obama administration had a lot of regulatory overreach, and they are dead set against that. And you know, the agricultural community, farm bureaus especially, were put off by the Obama administration. And a lot of that goes back to this clean water rule. So willing to spend money, willingness to spend money, yes. Willingness to regulate, you know, which is really the hard work, no, not so much sentiment there.
So let me read a bit from the end of your story at Great Lakes Now. With the ink barely dry on the 2018 budget, wrangling for Great Lakes in 2019 has already begun. So what do you think right now, as we sit and talk in March of 2018, are going to be the big issues in the next federal budget pertaining to the Great Lakes?
Well, the money is going to be in a big issue again. Undaunted, President Trump released his budget. And he included a 90% cut for the Great Lakes funding again. He took it from $300 million down to $30 million. So he's undaunted by what the region, you know, the region's reaction to his first budget proposal. Normally, you would see the president would propose his budget, Congress would bat it around, debate it. You know, it would get done, and it was not nearly in the spotlight that it currently is. But, you know, we just finished the 2018 budget, and the 2019 is proposed, and it seems like some of the same battles have to be fought all over again. And, a group of Great Lakes legislators have already sent a letter to the Appropriations Committee, the folks that write the funding bills, arguing for Great Lakes money for 2019. And we just finished 2018, so it never ends.
Well, we talk a lot about on various subjects with the Trump administration that there's kind of a new normal. Is this the new normal for Great Lakes funding, that there's going to be a big proposed cut every time a new budget proposal is put forward, and advocates for things like Great Lakes restoration are going to have to fight to try and keep that money in?
I think that's probably the case, as best as anybody knows. I'm probably 0 for 100 in trying to predict what the Trump administration is going to do about anything. But after talking to people, I thought after the administration got the pushback on the original attempt to zero out the money for the Great Lakes, they would have gotten the message and maybe come back with, instead of $300 million, proposed $250 or $275 million. But not the case. And I think as we've all seen everywhere, that this president has got his own playbook, and he's trying to play by his own rules. And I'm not sure that he even knows what they are until he steps to the podium to announce them. So that's what we're up against.
Gary Wilson is a contributor to Detroit Public Television's Great Lakes Bureau. Gary, as always, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Gordon.
His stories on Great Lakes policy and politics can be found at greatlakesnow.org. There's also links available at wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. This past weekend, hundreds of thousands of people marched in Washington calling for new laws regulating guns. Among those who made the trip to the nation's capital were students from Kalamazoo Central High School. They have also formed the group Students for Gun Legislation and started an online petition at change.org calling for comprehensive and responsible gun control policy. Reuben Glasser is a senior at Kalamazoo Central High School. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So how many students went to Washington, D.C.?
So there's a core central 8 of us in Students for Gun Legislation. And for Washington, D.C., not all of us could make it, but luckily we had 4 that could go, and it was truly a spectacular experience.
Why did you decide you had to go to the National March?
So for the National March, it was very important for us to not only have members in the local Kalamazoo March, but also in the National March, to show not only that there's a presence from Kalamazoo, specifically because we've had such gun violence in our past in the Uber shooting 2016, but also because we feel it's very important to be part of the overall movement and help nationally tie ourselves into the future for cohesive gun legislation.
And in part because there is this change.org petition, did you think that also made it important to be represented in Washington, D.C.?
The petition's spectacular, but truly, it's just a bunch of signatures, and we'll do things with those signatures. But overall, I think the movement matters more than the signatures, because we have nearly 300,000 signatures, but there were 800,000 people alone in Washington, D.C. So to become part of that body, and knowing that if everyone decides to go to their own closer march instead of going to the national march and showing the national pride, then you won't get that big turnout. And we felt that we had to send members, and it's responsible for us to show our support, and that there is a big group from Michigan, and there's a national will and want for gun legislation, that there has to be people coming from all around the place, and we should be part of that.
So what was it like to be there on Saturday?
It was powerful. It was super powerful. And I think one of the most moving parts of that was when the Parkland students recognized that because of the fact that they are a mainly white school with a good background, they got a lot of media attention because of the shooting. And this is unfortunate. There shouldn't be a shooting there, obviously, and it should get media attention. But the thousands of people that die every single day to gun violence, and the millions of Americans that die every year, that happens all across America, and it gets very little traction throughout the media. And I think that being represented through individuals from LA and Chicago and other major metropolitan areas is very important.
Is there any one moment in particular that stands out to you that hit home in a particular way?
There was one point in one member's speech where they asked everyone that had been touched by gun violence to raise their hand. And the number of hands that just shot up all around us was hard to see, because it shouldn't be that number of people being affected by such a thing that can be easily solved or can be solved with the passing of legislation.
Do you know anyone? I mean, did your hand go up at that moment?
Mine personally did not. I mean, I have been affected by the 2016 shooting in Kalamazoo, and I'll always remember that. But I didn't lose someone as close to me as other members of our group. We've had Jenna Bowker in our group. She lost direct family, and she's been very, very affected by that. So we can all tell, we know, and it hurts because it's something that doesn't have to happen if there's laws in place to stop people that shouldn't have a gun or aren't mentally stable from getting a gun. Because bad things can happen and bad things will happen if laws aren't in place.
So what's the latest right now in terms of your efforts with the petition? I think I checked today, it's well over 200,000 signatures. Does it seem like the momentum is still there?
So, of course, we've seen a drop in our numbers per day, but we are well over 270,000 signatures, I do believe. So we're estimating that we'll most likely hit that 300,000 mark, or we'll be relatively near that within the next month or two. But realistically, what we do with the petition is going to be where it matters. We do have a beginning plans of a petition delivery in the works, but of course, I can't speak on that until it's actually done. With that petition, though, it's there to not only give us a base that we can call upon. Thank you to everyone that donated to that GoFundMe. We sent out a petition update that allowed us to go to D.C. because individuals that have signed a petition, we can email, and they in turn went to our GoFundMe page and funded us for Washington, D.C. trip, which was spectacular because we ourselves as high schoolers don't have the funds to send ourselves there. So with that, it gives us kind of a root base to pull from for not only showing that we have the numbers behind us, but also for monetary support in some senses. But on top of that, it's spectacular to see all those that are supporting us, and not only in this community, but nationally and internationally. We've had signatures from all across the world, but mainly that are rooted in Michigan. And we see that this large group of people in Michigan will stand up against their representatives if they don't work for them and work with them. And that's what we're going to use petition to do.
You mentioned that getting the petition signatures is one thing, and then what happens from there is really what's important. Mm-hmm. Is 300,000 signatures the goal where you say, okay, we've got 300,000, now we want to move?
We don't really have a current goal in our mind, but we do see a time limitation because we need to keep the pressure there. Because if the pressure is gone, dissipates, politicians may see that we're not working anymore or we're not really pressing for this kind of legislation. And realistically, they'll probably not listen to or try to pass cohesive legislation because there aren't a large group of people that really feel so deeply about an issue. So we see more of a time limit until where this petition delivery will occur and when it will occur, because it needs to happen relatively soon to show the huge support we have, and it will indeed happen.
You mentioned a time limit there, and there have been people who've noted that in the past we've had a shooting. Mm-hmm. There's this moment where people say, my gosh, we've got to do something, and it seems like it goes away. Do you think that the march that happened in Washington, D.C. Was perhaps a signal that this time it's not going away, that this time people who want some sort of a change plan to keep putting on the pressure for it?
I do believe so. I think that one of the big points of the speech was that we're not going away. This is the beginning, not the end. And because it's the beginning, you will see things like a petition delivery in the next 2 months and the melding together of all the splinter groups in Michigan under one name that are going to work for gun legislation. And you will see this national movement start to not only engage with the representatives, but engage with all the grassroots movements across the United States to work together and find a better solution than the ones that we currently have, because obviously what we're doing isn't working.
Are you already in communication with some other groups? You mentioned kind of splinter groups in mm-hmm. Michigan. Are you already networking, Facebook group, anything like that?
So we've been networking for the past month and a half. I'm in contact with students all across the country, even those in Parkland, and especially in Michigan, because we have a large group of students that are very active, and you've seen walkouts happen all across the state. We have more recently in the past month been getting in contact with everyone that's having a walkout, everyone that plans a walkout, and we're going to hopefully become under one name and have that unified power where we can talk to representatives and not be shunned away. In the past, we actually messaged all of the state representatives and state senators in Michigan, and many of them came back to us with a email, even the ones that replied, which was not a large number, unfortunately. They replied with something along the lines of, well, you're not in our district, so realistically, you know, we might not work with you. But we are a state movement, and we will be seen as that, and they will have to work with us, or we will vote them out.
In other words, you want to have enough groups across Michigan that you're in everybody's district one way or another.
We do indeed, and we see that as very possible. I actually have I will have meetings tonight and in the future of this week with students that are going to be working and are working and in contact with their representatives. So as we see this kind of cohesive movement start to arise, it'll be much easier to get that actual change that we're pushing for.
You mentioned the walkouts at the schools a little bit ago. I just wondered what you make of the gentleman from Florida whose daughter was killed at the shooting at high school, who said he would prefer people, instead of walking out, walk up, find that student who seems like they have been ostracized, the student who's quiet, the student who perhaps feels shunned, and walk up to them, find out how they are, that maybe that would be the thing that would prevent the next school shooting.
I do completely agree with that. I think that in some senses, you do need to address the individuals that don't have that family that brings together a community and empowers them. And I think that every individual should be, in a way, empowered and brought together and have friends. And I think that's a general thing and a general outlook on life that you should have to interact and be friends with as many people as you possibly can. But I do believe that the walkouts are a spectacular way to show solidarity and need to happen, because without that, people may brush off this issue and not truly address it for the intensity and the possibility of how much damage it can really do to the American people and the American children.
I know when I was in school, late March, early April seemed like a long way from the end of the school year. But in reality, when you're talking about trying to get things done in public policy, that is not a lot of time. So what sort of things do you and the other students have planned between now and the middle of June?
So like I previously stated, we're going to be having a petition delivery, hopefully within the next 2 months. On top of that, we do see ourselves coming together and becoming a more unified statewide organization within this school year and beginning to set up the foundation for longevity in this movement, because we want to, as many of our members are going to college, our core is going to college after this year, there needs to be students in place after us. And we're meeting with juniors in our school very soon. We've already reached out to them, and we will meet with them and progress for longevity in the movement and especially in our community. So that's going to be one thing we look at, the foundation, on top of that, our petition delivery, and furthermore, the connection of Michigan, possibly some political forums with candidates and individuals in office. That's another thing to look for in our future. But those are our main four things that we're going to be focusing on in the next 4 months and throughout the summertime.
You're 17 years old?
I am 17 years old.
When do you turn 18?
April 25th, so very soon. I will be voting in the 18 midterms.
I've heard people talking about this issue saying, at least for this election, I'm going to be a single-issue voter. Do you think that describes you? And, well, let me just ask you, do you think that describes you in November of 2018? You're going to be a single-issue voter on the issue of guns.
I think if you don't support cohesive gun legislation, I don't see my vote going for you.
After graduation, do you plan to stay active on the issue of guns?
Completely and indefinitely. I think if there aren't activists in a movement, the movement will fall apart and crumble. So it's necessary for us to be there as that building block to support and bring in youth into the movement, new people into the movement, and progress us forward.
Reuben Glasser is a senior at Kalamazoo Central High School. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much.
He's also part of the group Students for Gun Legislation. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.